Another good question. So he's saying that often people who are religious have a kind of direction in their life and a way to kind of calm their mind. But people who, you know, religion just doesn't appeal to them, life is so stressful. Actually, for religious people too, life is stressful. Yeah. So how do we cope with the stress in our lives and get some kind of inner peace? I think a lot of the things that I'm talking about here are just common sense things, yeah? And there's different aspects to religion. You know, there's the whole theological aspect about how you describe the universe and this kind of stuff. That's theology. But then there's the practice aspect, you know? And what do we have to actually practice to work with our mind? And so, you know, a lot of the Buddha's teachings in this respect are just basic common sense. They don't, you know, and to practice them, you don't need to be Buddhist at all. Yeah? You can be Hindu or Muslim or Christian or Jewish or, you know, atheist or whatever, because a lot of these things, like what I was just talking about dealing with anger, that's not religious, is it? Yeah? Anybody can practice that. Same thing, like at the beginning of the session, we started off doing some breathing meditation, just learning to sit quietly. You know, that's totally non-denominational. We don't have to have any particular religion or any religion at all, just to be able to sit quietly and become our own friend. Okay? So for example, in doing the breathing meditation, you know, just sitting quietly and cultivating a feeling of satisfaction. Because I think a lot of the stress that you're talking about is because we are constantly dissatisfied. We feel like we should be better than we are. We should be different than we are. We should have more than we have. We should do something other than what we're doing. You know, we're always so discontent with ourselves and our lives. And I think that creates a lot of the stress. But when we're able to just sit there and breathe and just be content being who we are, sitting there and breathing. You know? You don't have to be anybody. You don't have to prove yourself. You don't have to have more than the next guy. You can just be content for just the gift of being able to sit there and be alive and breathe. Okay? And so in that way, we become friends with ourselves. Yeah? We learn to find a quiet space in our life. And I think another thing that's important in dealing with stress is recognizing that a lot of what society tells us we have to do or be or have is stupid. Excuse me, society. But it is. You know, who says we have to have, you know, X number of clothes? Who says we have to, you know, get a promotion? Who says we have to, you know, be a better athlete than somebody else? Why don't we just be content with who we are? We all have our own unique talents, our own unique abilities. Now, we don't need to compete with anybody else to try and be as good as them or better than them. Because often even you get what they have and you're not happy still. Isn't it? You know, you see all these people running around in society trying to get more money. And then they have to spend their money going to psychologists because they're so unhappy. Yeah? So let's just be content with having a little bit less money. I mean, we don't really need so much, do we? We can be content with what we have. Yeah? I mean, you wear the same clothes every day. I wear the same clothes every day. Does it make any difference? Do you really need lots of different changes of clothes and, you know? No. We just need something to, you know, shield our body. That's it. So developing a sense of contentment with who we are and what we have and not buying into everything society tells us, especially the advertising. You know? It's, I mean, I think advertising is really damaging. And because you look at the ads, and all these people look so happy, don't they? Yeah. Well, all the people who have those things, they aren't happy. Yeah. You know, somebody's sitting there with their cell phone, you know. Where's their cell phone? They're talking on their cell phone at the beach. And it looks so happy. You want to go out and get a cell phone and head for the beach. Well, who's happy talking on the cell phone at the beach? You know, they're probably talking to their office and trying to cut a business deal, and it's totally tense and miserable. You know, who needs a cell phone at all? Forget about it. Just enjoy the beach when you're on the beach. And when you're working, enjoy being with the people you work with. Okay? Does that help a little bit? Yeah? I think, you know, one of the big things we have to do is really stop and learn to think for ourselves. Instead of just buying into what everybody else tells us we should be, let's stop and think for ourselves. You know, what is my inner beauty? What is my potential? How can I make a positive contribution to the world? Because each of us has the ability in some way to make a positive contribution. You know, we don't all need to be Mother Teresa. We don't all need to be the Buddha. Okay? But we have abilities to affect people that the Dalai Lama and Mother Teresa and the Buddha didn't have. Okay? So if we can find our own unique way to contribute, even if it's just to a small number of people, then there's satisfaction and meaning in our life. Okay? So just stop and ask ourselves, what can I do to make this planet a better place? I may not be able to solve all the problems in the world. In fact, none of us can. But, you know, how can I put a little bit more kindness into this environment? And I'm sure if we stop and think about it, we'll all find some way to do it. So to really think about what is important in our life, and not just go around, not just go along with what everybody tells us we should do. Yeah. So especially, you know, people come and tell us all sorts of things. Oh, we're all going out for a drink. Come out for a drink with us. Oh, you don't want to go out for a drink? What kind of Puritan creep are you? You know? And then we just get pressured and we go along, and then we wind up doing things we don't really want to do. And that's because we're not really thinking and using our own inner beauty and our human potential. You know? So to really stop and like, okay, where do I want to put my energy in this life? You know, and touch into our potential and our inner human beauty. And really bring that out. Anything else? Oh, you want me to talk about myself? Ooh, my favorite topic of conversation.
A little bit about your history, your learning, and your teaching.
Okay.
And the second question I have is, what advice do you make on
how long? Okay. So a little bit about myself, and then what advice I can give you as inmates. Okay, I grew up, you know, in a suburb of Los Angeles, some kind of middle-class community, and I had a lot of spiritual questions when I was growing up, but I couldn't find any answers. And, you know, the more, I went to different religious teachings and things, but, you know, what was available to me, nothing really made sense, nothing really satisfied me. So I kind of threw religion out of my life for a while. And then I went to college. And after college, I traveled because I really wanted to understand what life is about through living it and really being with people who are different than me and understanding how different people think. And, you know, you understand people by becoming friends with them and by knowing them, not just reading about them. Although reading is certainly a good way to start. So I traveled for a while, and then I came back to the States. I went back to school. I still didn't know what the meaning of life was, but I thought it must have something to do with helping others. So I thought a good way to help others is through education. So I trained to become a teacher, and I taught little kids. And then during one summer vacation, I saw a sign about a meditation course. I didn't know anything about meditation. I did not know anything about Buddhism, okay? But this course was taught by two Tibetan monks, and I went. And one of the first things they said was, you don't have to believe anything we say. And I said, oh, good, now I'm going to listen. Yeah? Because I was so sick of people telling me what I had to believe that if they had said, this is the way, I would have said, bye-bye. Okay? But they didn't. They said, you're intelligent. You think about it. You apply it to your own life. You know? You see if it works. You check it out and see if it makes sense. So when I did that, I was very, very attracted to Buddhism because it really started answering a lot of the spiritual questions I had had. And also, when I started meditating, I found that it really helped me deal with my emotions. And so then, instead of going back to my teaching job, I quit my job and I went to Nepal and to India. This was 1975, and I went there because it was very difficult to find Buddhist teachers in America at that time. Now it's much easier. You know, Buddhism has become much more popular in America. There's a lot of temples and centers and teachers. But back in 1975, there wasn't. So I came to Asia and I studied here. And then in the course of being at the monastery, I decided that I wanted to ordain as a nun. And I had never thought to become a nun. You know, it was the furthest thing from my mind, actually, when I was young. But, you know, our life often turns out very different than we think it's going to. So I ordained in 1975, and then I trained a lot in Asia. And then as my teacher began to be requested to establish Buddhist centers in Europe and other places in Western countries, and they started sending some of their senior students there. So I lived in Europe for some time, in Italy and France. And then I actually wound up living in Singapore and teaching here from 1987 to 88. I was resident in Singapore. And then I went back to America and started teaching there. And it's interesting, you asked about the prison work and advice for inmates. I do prison work in America. I never had the idea, oh, I want to do prison work. Okay? But I've taken what's called bodhisattva vows. That means that you take a vow that when somebody asks you for help, if it's within your capacity to help, you help. Okay? You don't have a choice about it. You don't kind of sit and negotiate. If you can help, you help. If you can't help, you don't help. Okay? So I remember one time I got, this was some years back, I don't know, maybe 86, 87, I got a letter from an inmate in Ohio. To this day, I have no idea how he got my address. And when I've asked him, he said that he never sent a letter. He had written a bunch of different letters to different Buddhist centers asking for materials and help. He didn't know the center that I was at. So I don't know how, but somehow he didn't send a letter to the center I was at, but I got a letter from him. I don't know. So anyway, he and I started to correspond. So we started corresponding. Then other people, other inmates started writing me. And, you know, a few of them may have been people that Michael had told. But then other people, again, I have no idea how they got my address, but they just started writing to me. So people write, and they're sincere, and they want spiritual advice, so I help, and I go, you know, I write back. So it just kind of started in this way. And then because I travel a lot, I was able to begin to go into prisons and talk to Buddhist groups in the States and, you know, give some meditation instruction, give classes and talks and things like that. So it all kind of started like that. And I find for myself, I think I've learned much more from the inmates than I've taught them. You know? Because my experience has been that at least the inmates I deal with in the States, they are often much more serious on their spiritual path than people on the outside are. You know, because people on the outside, it's like, I don't feel like going to teachings tonight. I don't feel like meditating. You know, I'll just go out with my friends. People who are locked up really want to change, you know? It's like, you know, something went wrong somewhere. And you don't want to spend the rest of your life in prison. So you know you have to change something. Okay? So I often find that inmates have a much stronger spiritual resolve to change. You know, and a much deeper interest. And they're often much more appreciative of the teachings too, you know. And they really listen very, very well. So, you know? So the, in terms of what advice I would have, I think basically what I've just been saying, you know, have confidence in your own inner beauty. Have confidence in your special gift and what you can contribute to the world. And get to know yourself, know what your bad habits are, know what your weaknesses are, and try not to put yourself in situations where those weaknesses and bad habits can be activated. Okay. So it's like, if you know, if you weigh 100 kg, you don't go meet your friend at an ice cream parlor, do you? Because you're already overweight, and if you go to the ice cream parlor, you're going to eat and get fatter. So, you know your weakness, so you don't put yourself in that situation. Yeah. So I think that, I mean, this is advice for all of us, myself included, is, know where we're not so strong, and don't put ourselves with the people that can exploit our weaknesses and get us into our own bad habits. Know, and really work to build up our own confidence and put our mind in a good direction. And here I think self-discipline is really useful. And in the Buddhist tradition, we have a practice of taking the five precepts. Okay, so we take the precept to avoid harming others physically, to avoid stealing or taking what hasn't been freely given, to avoid unwise sexual behavior, so going off with somebody who's in a relationship, or if you're in a relationship, going with somebody else. Okay? To avoid lying and harsh speech, and to avoid intoxicants. So those are the five precepts. And I find that, if you can take the five precepts, and you do it with a spiritual teacher, and you imagine the Buddha there, and you're taking these precepts in the presence of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, in the presence of a spiritual teacher that you really respect, that gives you a lot more self-discipline to refrain from those five kinds of activities. Because you've already thought about it before, you already know, when I do this, no good. It makes me miserable, it makes me make others miserable, I don't want to do this, and you take that precept and that very strong determination to try and avoid it, and it gives you a lot of inner strength. So if you have the ability to take the precepts, or even if there's, you can't do the actual ceremony with the teacher, do it yourself. Imagine the Buddha, and you just imagine the Buddha and take that pledge and make that determination in the presence of the Buddha, and remember how happy the Buddha is with you when you really, have a strong determination to put your energy in a new direction. And that gives you, a lot more inner strength. Okay?